with you in different places as we worship together, sometimes in isolation, but always in community. We thank God not only for the expression of love that brought together this congregation, but the many different ways in which we are part of the greater church of Jesus Christ around the world. With gratitude and hope, we continue to worship this morning. I thoroughly enjoyed just a few weeks ago a word from a 10-year-old as he asked for clarification. Perhaps you have already heard the word. He paused and said to his mother, "Mother, what is a metaphor?" She looked at him, she took a moment, and then she responded, "My life is a train wreck." He looked at her and frowned and said, "Yes, I know, Mother, but what is a metaphor?" The people of Israel, out in the desert and in exile, often thought that life was a train wreck. The history of their journey had always been interrupted. The people of God began in a garden and soon were in a wilderness. Disappointment and discouragement. They are then slaves and find themselves wandering until there is a word of hope, and they now begin an exodus. But most of them will never make it. There is again discouragement and disappointment, not just hunger, but a lack of faith. Doubt prevailed. Just like in Ezekiel, those who were exiled and wondered if there would be a tomorrow and what it would look like, the people of God dealt with the power of death, disease, doubt, discouragement. We join them, do we not? We know the power of death. We understand it well. Now in exile, those who had once known a temple no longer saw the hope of a dream that also died. How many of us with them have had dreams that went dead? How many graveyards in our hopes have also gathered us up as these people? Ezekiel knew it well. And so when God asks him if he believes these bones can be resuscitated, he turns back and asks the one who made life itself. Oh, he knew death. He knew disappointment. You and I have known disappointment. We've come into a place where the new script of life is mystery and the unknown. We're not sure what tomorrow will bring and how long we wait. In our isolation, the faith that was so strong at times may have its questions. We understand. Ezekiel did the same. And as he struggled, we struggle also with the power of death. Corey Salford is one of those people. Corey has been a nurse up in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, as she's dealt in the early stages of a person's life. Babies, when they are terminal, are abandoned, sometimes left to die in the hospital. Corey didn't like that. She decided to take one at a time to her home. There she cradles them and feeds them where appropriate and has waited. One after another has died. She knows, as you and I know, that there is a valley where there is death and disease. I listened to the daughter of a fine man who now in dementia cannot respond or understand what she's saying. I watch as she tries to communicate her love one more time. But the distance and the isolation is not just physical. It's emotional. And is it spiritual? Ezekiel understood that kind of isolation. How can you sing the songs of Zion in a foreign land? How can you hope when there is no hope? Oh, the power of death is so strong. My father was 9 years old when his hero, an older brother, came back from college in Brazil. The church gathered, you've heard this story before perhaps, for a picnic. It was their national day. And as three or four went out on the boat, life seemed so happy on a beautiful beach morning. And then tragedy struck and two of them were drowned. My father's oldest brother, his hero, passed away at age 9 for Albert. We know death. We're not sure about disease. This mysterious, infectious enemy of ours has torn us apart in some ways and very gently and quietly become our silent enemy. Yes, the people of God, the Israelite, knew the power of death. But that was not the only power at work. The same experience for the Israelite that encountered death also encountered life and hope. There is a power in life, and God from the beginning brought forth a garden and continued to multiply its possibility. He brought a people out of slavery to become free and hopeful people. Yes, there was a Holocaust even for those who lived in the awful experience of the genocide of World War II. Over 6 million people, Jewish people, were killed. But around the world, in so many different places, the Jewish family has reemerged. If there is a power in death, there is also a power in life itself. We understand the possibility. We understand that God continues to breathe. This is the wind that Ezekiel heard about as he watched that which he thought was dead come back to life. We know it's possible. Sometimes we forget. And yet, there is a power of life. It will continue to express itself. Krakatoa was an island. 1883, the most significant of all volcanic eruptions, destroyed life, and within the area, at least for 20,000 miles, there was darkness and gray. You perhaps read the story. Boats avoided the place. It was a volcanic nightmare. Years later, one boat had to stop to find water. And as they paused, the place they had been told was dead had erupted with green grass and flowers, trees and birds. It had not died. It had simply taken its time to find the life of God. And so we find it in the beauty of a spring, where the power of life overcomes the power of death. It happens all the time. When I lived in another state, I was still impressed at the end of the winter when I thought everything was dead in the backyard and suddenly honeysuckles would show up and there'd be flowers over here. I was still surprised by someone who had lived there before, who had regularly planted seeds that would reemerge. That's what God has done in our life too. I was impressed several years ago with archaeologists and their story of moving into Egyptian pyramids and finding in some of the mummies' hands some seeds over 3,500 years ago. Seeds dead, dormant. They took them back to England, and in London, somehow they were exposed to some humidity, and the seeds began to emerge into flowers. And in the laboratory, suddenly there were seeds 3,500 years old, from seed to flower. That's what God does with our hopes. That's what God does with life. There is not just a power of death. There is the power of life. And you and I have a symbol in this room or wherever you are before, because we believe in the power of God to bring forth life out of death. Soon we'll once again celebrate it with Easter. In the meantime, this same Lori Penchert reminds us that somewhere along the way, we are like stained glass windows. We have been broken, but in the brokenness, we have been brought together. And in being together, we are stronger. You remember the comment, somewhere along the way, we were all broken and we were broken, and then stronger in the broken places. Ah, there is a power of death, but there is more. There is a power of life itself. And here's the good news for an Ezekiel and for us, that God has imbued each one of us with this breath, this wind that brings forth life out of death, that we too may command it, that we may pass it on, that it may be for us a gift for others, but also for ourselves. I read just recently, one more time, that Ludwig van Beethoven, this wonderful and so well-equipped musician, over 200 years ago, wrote music for instruments that had not yet been invented. What's going on in the human mind and in the human heart? The fact that we're part of a music, the fact that we're part of a life that doesn't die but is constantly brought back to life. That's why we gather, sometimes even in our isolation, to believe again. Recently here we've been studying about Victor Hugo, who became in France a particular model of care and survival. He too was exiled. Left on an island, he did not return until in a Franco-Prussian war, people had surrounded Paris and they were in disturbing disillusionment. And then the word came that Victor Hugo had boarded a train and he was coming back into Paris. And the quiet word around the town was, he is one of us, and he has come to be with us, and he will bring us hope. I'm told that at his funeral, there were more people to celebrate his life than anywhere before in the country of France. What is it about our life that gives us this hope, this power to not only believe, but to take in the breath of God? That's what we need. That's what we hope for. Years ago, off the Lake Michigan beachhead, there were people just sunbathing because in an area where they were, none of them could swim. And then a cry of help where outside someone was struggling and almost about to go under. They looked at each other and these 27 people said, none of us can swim, how can we help? And then one of them said, well, what if we take each other's arms and form a chain and slowly but surely move out there and see if we can catch the man? They did. A chain of life in the midst of death. Did you celebrate with me when in the Special Olympics in Seattle and the 100-yard dash was about to take place, and then it did, and 10 yards into the dash, one of the boys fell. You know what the others did? They stopped running. They turned around. They came back. They help him stand up. And then together, all those who were running crossed the finish line, walking together to a standing ovation of a group of people who understood something different about what people can do when they come into God's world and discover life and the spirit that brings us together. That's what we hope for. That's what we believe in, is it not? That's why wherever we are called not only to acknowledge the death that is part of power in this world, but to acknowledge the life that gives us life and gives us the opportunity to share it with others. I'm still moved by the story of a mother in Britain whose 12-year-old daughter was about to have a birthday. She usually had her hands with gloves on, and she'd take the gloves off because her hands were scarred and in some places mutilated as she did the kitchen cleaning. The daughter, who was about to have 6 or 7 friends over for the birthday, said, Mother, if you don't mind, please put the gloves back on when my friends come in. I don't want them to stare at your hands and be distracted or turned off, as she would say. The mother smiled and said she would. And then an aunt, as she walked away, said, do you have a minute? Do you know anything about how your mother's hands got scarred that way? No, said the daughter. She never told you. When you were 1 year old, there was a fire. You were on the second floor. The fire was engulfing the entire house. Everybody got out, but your mother went upstairs to find you still in the crib. The blankets were on fire. Part of the ceiling began to fall. She brushed it aside. A beam even took her on the side. But she picked you up and folded you in her arms, came down the stairs, out the door, and handed you to a firefighter before she fainted. That has to do with the scars on her hands. The doorbell rang. The friends are coming in. As they gather and are about to sing happy birthday, the 12-year-old daughter pauses. Did you hear the story? And says, before we sing, if you don't mind, I'd like for you to look at my mother's hands. Aren't they beautiful? They saved my life. Take note. The hand of God appeared to Ezekiel out in the desert where things looked dead and the graveyard of many hopes, and called Ezekiel to see and believe again. You and I can also be a people whose hands and heart are beautiful because we have the power of hope. So by God's grace, may you find the power that gives life. Amen.